now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is Steve Mira. Steve has been with us in the past. Steve is a recognized expert in the field of phenomena investigation. I would say that in the world today, there are very few people that have Steve's background experience in investigating and interacting with, call it what you will, the spirit world, the implicate order that David Bohm talked about, the holographic universe. All of that factors into what we're going to be discussing. So without any further ado, Steve, welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back, James.
Before we started, we talked about some of the things that we wanted to discuss. And what I want to get across to the viewing audience, our viewers, our listeners are pretty switched on, but to the wider, more mainstream so-called truth community, they need to know how relevant this information is, because what we're seeing in this burgeoning global tyranny, the rise of these faceless bureaucrats turned petty tyrants, as above, so below, the ancients from time immemorial knew that there's an unseen spirit world, for lack of a better term, around us that can at times have an undue influence on our own world. The ancients propitiated them, the gods, you know, votive offerings and more, right? So they knew that the intelligence or intelligences that worked in the unseen realms that oftentimes overlap with our world, that they were not to be messed with. So what I'd like you to discuss, Steve, because you have some poignant examples, compelling examples of when you and your team, or you knew of investigators investigating a certain phenomena, and then after a while, it seemed the phenomena began investigating them. So I would like the people to know that, you know, I'm not going to make a bold assumption and say we are not living in an end times apocalyptic scenario. I wouldn't be so presumptive, right? I'm taking no chances. So let our listeners know just what they may be dealing with out there.
Okay. Well, I think to start off with, I think the biggest problem that we face is the social teachings about the phenomenon. And we have numerous different names for it from numerous different cultures. And it's age old. And it is as old as far as we can go back from, you know, even probably predating historical documentation. The problem is that we've come to rely on what we're being told as the truth. And, you know, usually it's very far from that. And you have to really kind of get into it for this phenomenon to show its true colours sometimes. But when it does, you don't forget that in a hurry, you know, because it means so much different than what we've been told the phenomena represents. For me, dealing with the subject of ufology about 40 years back now, I was always intrigued as to, you know, where are these things coming from? What is their intent? And what's the secrecy around this phenomenon? So I pretty much spent the next 15 years full-time in the subject of investigation, active research of the aerial phenomenon, UFO phenomenon. But after about 15 years, I exhausted it. I was like, well, do you know what? Where's all the rest of the material? Where there's still no answers, even after 15 years. And I thought, why have we no answers after 15 years, some of the best minds in the world? And I thought to myself, I wonder if we're just on the wrong track. We're not designed to get the answer from that. Because what we're presented with within the realms of ufology is a display, is a manipulation of our perceptions, and is deceitful and deceptive, you know. So it is purposely designed not for us to gain an answer from it. And I had massive big areas of blanks and I just needed to fill in. So I ended up going into the paranormal and parapsychological research. And believe it or not, I started to find some of these areas, the blanks, I could fill in. And once I started putting these pieces in, it created somewhat, I mean, it was a bit like a jigsaw puzzle, and it created somewhat of a picture for me. And that picture was far from what we'd been told. And it led me to think there's been a bit of a ruse. There's been purpose compartmentalization of subjects. For instance, you know, the paranormal guys and those interested in the supernatural and the cult stuff were divided, purposely divided away from UFOs, ufology. It was like they were divided into separate boxes and never the twain should meet. I mean, you had the paranormal guys that never deal with UFO guys. UFO guys never deal with the paranormal guys. And it was just set up in a certain way of this compartmentalization so that we couldn't figure it out. Now, it's a very clever act, and I don't know how this came to be, how these subjects came to be purposely so divided. It's as if like somebody didn't want us to put these clues together. But once we started putting all these things together, from the supernatural, the metaphysical, the occult side, the paranormal, the ufological, and all these wonderful subjects, once we throw them all into one box, which we refer to as phenomenology, it's just the cocktail, things started to make sense. And now 40 years on, I now realize we are on the cusp, right on this cusp now, of ufology changing forever. Because now we're realizing that, you know, we've been deceived. You know, our perceptions are being altered by this phenomena. It's the levels of deception are involved. You know, we'll take you off in different tangents purposely. And the extraterrestrial hypothesis, well, you know, you've got people which will basically stake their lives on this. But what are they staking their lives on? Well, if you actually look through where we got the evidence to support that, this is extraterrestrials visiting Earth from distant planets. There's only one thing left there to that people have relied on, and that is the information provided by the entities themselves. In other words, we come from this planet, da 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 da. It's the same old story. It's just like if I had a class full of people, I'd say this is the one-liner you feed to the humans. This is the one-liner. The ecology of the Earth, you come from this planet, and da 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 da. But when you look at it, it just seemed too much of a Star Trek episode. You know, it was like they're all bipedal, there's over 2,000 different variations of entities which are supposed to be coming from various different planets, 2,000 different planets, all visiting Earth. I mean, that phenomenon traces back. And the notable thing, as my colleague has stated, who is Barry Fitzgerald, who I work a lot with, is that mask is forever changing. The phenomenon is the same, but its presentation and mask is always altering to fit in with current times, things just on the cusp of coming. You know, I mean, and that means that it may fall more in the paranormal. Now, after studying the paranormal phenomena for over 25 years, I was involved in some very high experiments, some of which could be like continued skull experiments, should we say, advanced skull stuff. I was in touch with those that were involved with skull. And this is an experiment that took place in Norfolk in the UK, in a small town called Skull. And it was in a cellar and it was a sitting. This sitting was for paranormal. It was like a mediumship seance type experience. And they started communicating with spirit, as they thought. But as time progressed, something else invaded the circle. They lost control of the circle. That's the worst thing for any mediumship circle. You've got to maintain control. They lost control to something else. That something else started coming through as entities, though that we refer to maybe extraterrestrial, interdimensional. It falls in line with the early 1900s accounts of mediumship with Aleister Crowley and interdimensional entities being seen, hence the name Lamb, which was referred to it, and so on and so forth. It was literally the same thing, but, you know, large distances between these two experiments. However, when they started to lose the circle is because there was an onslaught of these entities. They were just couldn't control it. When I talked with the founding guy of the Skoll experiment, Robin Froy, who recently passed away, unfortunately, that when they shut it down because they lost control of the Skoll experiment, that phenomena of these entities never left Robin, never left him. They pursued into his life, into his house, into his daily routines. And it was like, well, he couldn't shut the door. These were guys which were experienced in mediumship. They were experiencing about shutting down, but they couldn't control this. This was something vastly different. So that led me into studies, referring to Project Doorway, which is its name, and looking back into our past, because we know this is an age-old phenomena. It's just so, I mean, I think my friend Barry went back to 7,000 BC in Botswana was kind of the earliest kind of references. There was serpent worship, but it was a lot about blood sacrifice. And that carried on for such a long time. In fact, the ancient civilizations themselves were aware of doorways to this other reality, to this other realm. They called it different things. They called it the land of the gods. They called it the passageways to the deities, whatever they thought these things were, which were communicating with them through these passageways, were created by angels. These were ancient buildings on certain areas of the planet, which are heightened through geomagnetic energies and lines. They knew that it was a combination of frequencies from the vocal cords of an arm, which unfortunately, humans have changed so much that a lot of our vocal cords don't exist to create some of those arms now, such as like a Gudra mantra. I mean, the Gudra mantra in India is a certain type of om, but it takes years and years and years to be able to perfect it. That is if we even have the capabilities to do it now with our vocal cords. But back then, it was different. And not only would it generate an om from their vocal cords to generate this frequency in this building that they built, it could be a temple, it could be a resonant chamber. They were scattered. They're scattered all over the planet. But they also utilize the power of the sun, that terahertz frequency. That terahertz frequency arrives, and we see it in morning and in evening, the rising sun, the setting sun. This is why people will find and tell you it's the best times to meditate, you know, in the rising sun or the setting sun, because it's terahertz frequency you're dealing with. It has this connection with us consciously. It was a double lock system in a lot of these ancient sites with the om and, of course, the frequency of light coming in. And it caused a resonant chamber to resonate and, of course, develop a phasing of reality where these two sides could meet. Now, there's been experiments done. I mean, my colleagues and I have done experiments in some of these locations at the right times and picked up audio recordings. There was audio recordings of our sounds, not from our side, but from another side. It's like drum beat and things going on. Sometimes the sighting of a land, which, yes, it's got trees and things, but it doesn't look quite right. It doesn't look normal. It shouldn't be there. It's like there is this divide of realities, but we can bring the two together. Our ancient ancestors knew how to do that. Something went wrong thousands of years ago because our ancient ancestors from around the world ended up destroying about 70% of their own passageways. So whatever they were dealing with, for some reason of unknown origin, they decided we don't want to communicate with these anymore. Something, we don't like it, we don't want it. And they literally destroyed 70% of their own structures designed for this around the world. It wasn't just one culture. It was many, many cultures. They were even burying them, get rid of them, bury them. We don't want them anymore, you know? And if you just look at Göbekli Tepe, for an example, I mean, we're starting to dig them all these things up, which just should have never been dug up in the first place. You know, we're starting to engage more. And that's what the phenomena really likes, you know, it likes that engagement. And that's a real big problem for us. And as I went through my investigation process, I realized there is a mechanism. It lies within here, the consciousness. But it goes back beyond that. It goes back to the days of occult and witchcraft. Because even the Vril Society, which was the German Metaphysical Society at one point, before it changed its name to the Vril, in wartime Germany, they were connecting with these entities, which were relaying information to them of exotic technology. That exotic technology they obtained was passed to the commanders of German forces, and they experimented with them and managed to generate and build certain things which you might refer to exotic engines, exotic, you know, and specialized aircraft, which this is what worried the Americans, because they thought, hang on, they're getting knowledge, they're utilizing it, they're building stuff. We need to get into this war because we need that technology. We need those scientists. And of course, that's exactly what they did. They went in, they took all the stuff, the scientists as well. In fact, the scientists were employed for the Apollo program, and you know, and built the Apollo rocket, Saturn V, which is exactly the same rocket as the V2 bomb, which was flying over from Germany and killing people in England. It's just a smaller version, in a sense of speaking. But they took that technology and they took the scientists and they took all those secrets away and continued that in the US. But they couldn't give Germany the authorities of the skies. If you have authority over the skies, you're not going to win a battle. And of course, that was the main thing. But where this technology come from? You don't get it for free. There's always a price to pay. Always. Now, the metaphysical representative real society suddenly disappeared. In fact, there was just a note left by them saying, we don't want to do this anymore. And we're leaving. Gone. Never seen before. Don't know what happened to them. Very mysterious. But that trait of contacting that unknown source carried on in the skull experiments. And again, they witnessed it. They opened this bridge of communication. And we realize how deceptive this phenomena is. Now, I've argued against the point about spiritualism for many years, because through our experiments, we realize that when we're communicating with this source, whatever, you know, people might refer to them as spirits or whatever, we went through the process and we kept building and building and building upon it until we got to the point where we could ask questions. And we set out 10 questions for, you know, to get answers. And this was now, at this point, was being delivered by direct voice phenomena out of the air, always above us, but out of the air. When we went in to deliver these 10 questions, all of a sudden, there was the answers. Boom, 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 boom. We hadn't even asked the questions. It obtained the information from us. Prior to even asking the questions, we were given the answers. That, just that act alone, was remarkable. And we ended up in a tailspin, really, because we were thinking, well, if that is the case, how do we really know we've been communicating with what we think we're communicating with? Because there's many people that say, well, you know, my uncle Albert came through as a spiritual contact. We don't know that, because they can obtain it from here. They obtain it from the sitters. They obtain it from the people there. All the information that you want to hear to prove the existence you're communicating with a spirit already lies in your mind. All they got to do is obtain it and just feed it back to us. And this is what seemingly has been happening. Is that we have been communicating what we might think with spirit, when in fact, they're not. There's a deception of all this going on. We knew this because after a while, we set out a number of questions, another set of questions, which could trigger a volatile response, which means it's not you, Uncle Albert. You know, it's, we can press the right buttons to gain the angry remarks, which we know then. There's, you know, it doesn't take a lot to actually upset them. And we also realize that this phenomena rears its head when you start prying into areas of particular research. I mean, as an example, I was researching with Barry about Sumerian demons. Now, the Sumerian demons were described to be dog-headed people, just like Anubis, really, you know, the Egyptian days. And there's lots of references to dog-headed people from all over the world. And there are even accounts today of what is referred to as the Dogman.
The Greeks referred to them as a cynocephalid.
Absolutely.
Alexander the Great referenced them.
Yeah. Yeah, these things are, you know, they're quite widespread, you know, around the world, these incidents. And when we started really getting heavy into the research of these Sumerian gods, all hell broke loose. I mean, at my house, at Barry's house, his light fittings were ripped out of the wall. It was a hell of a time. It was like, it felt to us, we've got a slap on the hand. Don't go there. Don't mess with this. Don't do this. And it surprised us because it knows. It's around us. It knows what we're doing when we're pressing into areas that it doesn't want us to. And sometimes we get the punishment for doing it. We get the slap on the hand. Don't do this. This has happened countless times when we're researching this certain type of phenomena. Now, if we go back to the days of Skinwalker Ranch, the investigations carried out by the NID team with Robert Bigelow, we now are starting to hear, because it's been very cloak and dagger, that stuff, for quite some time, because they were trying to figure out what the hell is going on, just as I did when I entered into this subject, what the hell is going on? And they started to try, they reached where I reached, they managed to start putting pieces together and realizing this phenomenon represents far more than what we realize. And it's alarming. People can't come out and say, the phenomenon is right here, right now, right in front of your face, and can interact at any time, and we can't do nothing about it. We can't tell people that. We can't go around the world saying that. It's too alarming. There's no control elements there for us to be able to deal with. So that's why it never happened. And this is why we tore those parts and put them in separate boxes, and hopefully that, you know, we won't get people, which will be bright enough one day to put it together. But as we now know, Robert Bigelow's recently come out and said, there's a hell of a sting in the tail of this phenomena. And we have to be careful, because for his pressing involvement in the research at Skinwalker, it ripped right through his life, that negativity. He lost his wife, he lost his son, he lost his grandson. You know, he just went through hell. But then when you look at the other people that were involved in NIDS, they have the same stories to tell. Whatever we did there, it came back with us, it intrigued into our lives, and it ran havoc of negative things, people passing away, the worst incidents. But when you look at these together, you think, well, it's far beyond coincidence. It's far beyond coincidence that all these people were so badly affected. And that's what happens if you stay with that one foot in that camp for too long. It has a terrible negative sting in its tail, and you've got to be careful. And what we learned was, is that we learned to walk away. We learned to, even at the heightened moments, we thought, oh my God, this is amazing, walk away. Because we have to do it in digestible chunks so that it doesn't affect our lifestyles too much. Occasionally, we went a little bit too far, and yes, we got punished for it. But now we know that we have to, because the phenomena will draw you in. It'll put on, if it's UFOs, it'll put on a beautiful light display, that glamouring, as we say, a beautiful light. And you're watching this, you're hooked into it. But what you're unaware of is what's going around, what's around you, what's going on. It's the magician's hand. You know, and this is why people get drawn into these things and have bad experiences. Now, all this love and light business and all these other entities, that absolute rubbish. It's absolute rubbish. There was a huge amount and a huge effort to keep this subject of what this phenomenon really represents quiet. It's just huge effort, you know? But now, researchers at the real top places, because I'm a part of a number of think tanks up there, and they, without me saying it, they're figuring it out. They're starting to figure it all out. They are realizing that there's been a ruse to keep our eyes on the skies, to make us think that it's like Star Trek and they're all friendly aliens out there. That is, as SETI said, the astronomers, space is unusually quiet. The surveys carried out in regarding how many of these UFOs are really interfering in our lives now is massively grown. It is on a daily basis worldwide. And statistically speaking, we could say one sighting roughly every 10 seconds or so. That's how many. They don't always get forwarded to the right places, but approximately that's about right. You got to take in some of those are misidentifications, some of them are hoaxes, and da 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 da. But there's a huge amount of contact. Even the sighting is contact because it's conscious, a conscious connection with the phenomena is taking place. It vamped itself up. But what they're realizing is that this is no different than the conjuring phenomena. Back in the day, we conjured a real ghost in Canada. It was known as the Phillip Experiment. It happened in Ontario, and it was a group of professionals and academics, psychologists and parapsychologists, and literally, just by creating a ghost, they gave it a name, they gave it a how it would look, they gave it its whole life. And they fed into this. And within a few weeks, that phenomena existed as a tulpa. It took on its own sense of a being. It was sighted, it was experienced, and this is conjured. It's a conjuring of this phenomenon. If we look at CE5 with Stephen Greer, what he refers to as the protocols of contact. Is he takes people which are meditators to a location and they meditate for long periods of time, willing the phenomena to manifest in the skies above. And it does. And it does. It works. He's telling the truth. It does work. But there is no warnings. There's no warnings with the CE5 protocols. None at all. It's throwing them to the wolves, as far as I'm concerned. I'll be interested to go back and look at those people that are involved in these incidents 10 years on and say, how's your life been since then? What's been going on in your life? You know?
Some of them,
That's
from what
how
I
it's gone.
understand, have undergone abrupt personality changes that have gone.
Absolutely.
And another point that you made also is so many of these places are high magnetic, electromagnetic anomaly areas. So when you combine the meditation on that particular spot, calling in whatever, yes, that could be a recipe for disaster.
Oh, it is. It is absolutely a recipe disaster. I mean, we know that phenomena can be conjured. Taking five meditators out to a location and willing on a phenomena to, you know, to manifest in the sky is no different than having five mediums around a seance table. And if we look at the Skoll experiment, what manifested around the seance table were UFOs, bottom line. Not only entities, but dinner size, plate size, you know, plate size objects moving around. They were described and seen as UFOs. They fired a laser type light down onto the table, and as they moved, it kept the same point on the table. These balls of light, which would manifest. You could feel them land in your hand. You could feel mass to them. You could close your hand and see the light within. These were real physical objects which had been manufactured. It's what I call physiological constructs through the power of conjuring. It's the same thing on a different scale, but the same thing. Now, what we have is people saying now, well, you know, we go to these certain places, we wait, we wait, we wait. We're all on a sky watch, we're all willing, wanting something to happen. And hey, presto, it's no surprise. You know, you've got enough people there and enough will to want one of these things to manifest. But what's manifesting? is the real phenomena. It isn't a trickery. It isn't an hallucination. It is the real phenomena, and it will and can interact with those individuals. And there is, like I say, on the protocol side of CE5, no warnings. We give those warnings. We understand them. What we've done is to be aware that a lot of these things are manifesting in key locations around the planet. Those key locations around the planet can be measured utilizing satellites in orbit. We use two or three different satellites in orbit, and we look for gravitational anomalies. We look for magnetic anomalies, the positive ones as well as the negative ones. I'll get to the negative in a second, but the positive ones, we've started to look at all the positive regions. Now, these are areas of 250 nanoteslas plus. I mean, these are, if to see it on a scale, these will be the very hot red areas. But when you look at what's taken place in these key areas, in fact, what we did is we swapped it. We looked at the world's most significant UFO events, and we found them that they're in these locations. And we thought, well, we decided to do more and then more. And we realized that it's just too high for it to be coincidence. There's got to be a connection between the phenomenon and these locations around planet Earth, where these people are having these experiences. And don't get me wrong, it's not just UFOs. It's your cryptid sightings. It's your paranormal stuff. It all is connected. It is the phenomenology. It is presenting various different types of phenomena that we ourselves have divided and put into boxes. The crypto, the paranormal, the UFO, they're all one of the same thing. When we hear stories of strange creatures being seen from a landed UFO and the banging pieces of wood on trees outside and the throwing things at people, it rings cryptid. Because that's what they do. And you think, well, how and why would that happen? Why would we have the paranormal attributes in there? Why would we have people seeing a UFO and then having poltergeist activity in the homes for the week? It shouldn't do it because we're supposed to be dealing with two different subjects here. No, there is a fine line that runs through all these things, and they're all connected in some way. Now, I don't know if it's the phenomena. I don't think we've ever seen the true mask. I don't think we've ever seen its true mask. I think we're seeing representations of it. People always ask me, well, what's the grey? What's the reptilian? What's the Pleiadian? What's the small hairy creatures? What's the robot? They're all masks. I don't think we're ever seeing its true representation. I think right at the beginning, we've got the serpents and the reptoids and the reptilian types. Absolutely. Those are the prominent ones. But then it goes into a multitude of deception and perception alteration. People don't know what they're seeing. They get us to see what they want. We experience what they want us to experience. And if they don't, we don't have it. It's as simple as that. That's how much we are controlled by
And
this.
over the ages, they seem to manifest to a particular culture in a particular era in a way that is understandable. Like to the ancient Greeks, they appeared as Greek gods dressed in togas and what have you. And to the ancient Chinese, they appeared in this kind of exalted Chinese kind of form.
Exactly. These entities take on so many different masks. But not just the entities themselves, even their vehicles, if you want to call them that. I mean, we look at, they are where we know through doing our experiments and communication experiments, these instrumental transcommunication, EVP, call it what you want, and these direct communications, direct voice phenomenon connections with the phenomenon itself. It takes time. When you get to there, you can obtain information. We don't know if it's true or not, though. This is the problem, because there's always deception that could be involved. But what we do know is that they are aware. They, on two occasions, they provided information to us of events in 18 months' time, and they were absolutely bang on. They were absolutely right, and it didn't just happen once. It happened twice. And these aren't just coincidences. It was such an event that you say, no, No, there's no way. I mean, one of those events involved us traveling all around the other side of the world to a place we'd never traveled to and never been there before and no reason to ever go. 18 months later, we were there. Something happened and the transition of the universe and life, we were there. But it told us. So they are aware. We do know at least 18 months they are aware, maybe even longer. Maybe they're aware of most future events. But when we see the objects, the UFOs, represent things during the Second World War. During the Second World War, they were like referred to as ghost rockets. They looked like balls of light, like tracer fire and things like that. They took on a different aspect, you know. Of course, we had the saucer era. But we had, you know, if they knew that just 6 months later, we're going to have all these flying saucer movies, then they could perceive themselves to be what's going to be happening. It's the kickstart to the change. They represent themselves, thus the movies come. But maybe it's the other way around. You know, maybe when people have contact experiences at an early age, it's because they know you're going to have an experience in later in life. And this, we reverse the role. They prep you for what's going to be happening. They're entwined with reality, the matrix or whatever it is. There's definitely some type of program that is going on. And it can be manipulated by this trauma. It seems to be aware of what future programming is going to be, what the current is, and manipulation takes place just as they've changed historical outcome. They've changed things in the past. We know from the days of Alexander, you know, who tried to besiege cities and stuff, and he had two shining shields come down and fire pencil beams lights at these like walls like Jericho, 50-foot real walls crumbled to the ground, allowing him to besiege the cities. He had help. And it's the same for Moses and all these other hundreds of different things. They've geared and fashioned and changed outcomes. You know, they've wanted war. They've always wanted war. You know, they've always encouraged battle because it's loss of life. It's like the serpent worship in the ancient days and the blood sacrificing people who were sacrificed on a grander scale. Because now we don't have to kill one person for a deity. We can do it in the thousands, you know, with the weapons we've got. And then you start to realize where these weapon plants and chemical plants and all these things around the world are. They have been purposely built in negative anomalies, -250 nanotesla. And it's not by chance. They've even purposely relocated them to locations where negative areas and ancient sites stand. They know that their success rate, their health, the wealth, the success rate of what they're doing can be empowered through the process of this belief and utilizing these energies for their own reason. And this, but the downside is that the most of the suicides in the world take place there. In negative anomalies. They're all the same. You take Los Alamos Labs, you know, it's on a very potent negative anomaly. The amount, what you don't get to hear very often is the amount of lives that are lost in that place. People are committing suicide all the time there. They don't know why, but they do. And if you look at the other places, I mean, for instance, in the UK here, we have ancient sites across the country. One of those places is Salisbury Plain. Now, we can never really get to Salisbury Plain because it's a military zone. It's a test zone for tanks and operations. But there is also a weapons plant manufacturing place there, a military one. It's built purposely to be in that negative anomaly with those ancient sites. Those ancient sites were probably used by our ancestors, communicating with things that probably they may not have were not desirable. But it seems that there's a hidden secrecy, an operation going on that we know where to build things to gain access through those old esoteric ways. You know, I mean, we have to ask the question, why do people do what they do? Why did they worship other gods? Why did they do so many bad things? Because there's reward in it. You wouldn't do it otherwise. There's reward in it. Those rewards can be through, allegedly, from what they're told, not just this plane of existence, but the next. And also the health, the wealth, and the success of something. It's all about that now. And they've, what they've done is they've triggered, they've realized and become reliable on that source. That source is not a good source. It's the same thing. When all this information was pushed into a computer, an artificial intelligence computer manufactured years ago by Professor Jacques Vallée, he built an artificial computer, an artificial intelligence computer, and fed all this information in. But the computers in then times didn't have the processing power to deal with all that. Now they do. And it was a computer, it was referred to as the SAR system. And it was a very clever, highly, very expensive artificial intelligence computer. And they fed all this information into it. It fed all the information about cryptos, cryptids, and what type of experience people have there. It fed in all about the paranormal stuff, hauntings and poltergeists and the things that happen in it. It fed all about UFO and the contacts and the experiences that people have. And it kept feeding it and feeding it and feeding it with as much information. And what they wanted after so many years was to be able to press a button and it'd work it all out and conclude, what is it? They did this for years. And they sat there one day and went, okay, it's now come to the time. Let's press the button and see what it's going to conclude. Clicked it. Of course, it starts happening. And all of a sudden, information comes out. The computer looked at every type of phenomena that has been reported from biblical times to current times. And not only the phenomena, but what took place within that phenomena. And its conclusion was, there is one source with the capabilities of physiological construction. One source. The computer realized that because of the connections, so many connections between all these phenomena, the computer saw it as one source, such as the cryptids and the paranormal and the ufological and any other strange things you might experience, has ultimately at the core one source. And that one source presents itself in multiple ways, which we've divided and put in different constructs, different boxes, different names. And it also has the capabilities of physiological constructs. A physiological strong construct could be like me, could be like you. We are physiological beings. And they can construct that so that they can interact on a physiological basis within our matrix, within our created universe around us, the reality that we perceive or we think we know.
The Men in Black is a classic example of it.
Absolutely. The Men in Black is a classic example. You know, it's... And the more we started digging into this, James, the more we started realizing this phenomena is not what we thought. This phenomena is much more deep, much more sinister, and people are offering themselves to it. They're offering themselves to this phenomena now. And it's absolutely shocking. When I was lecturing in Arkansas, it's the Bible Belt, it's love and light. Everything about this phenomena is about love and light there. I went there to try and educate them. I had the audience in tears because one woman said, I can't believe you said that. I just introduced my 12-year-old daughter to this phenomena. I'm thinking, oh my God, what are you doing? You know, you need to have a grasp of what you're walking into and what you actually are going to be dealing with, because it can and will do hold on to your life right through life if it wants to. You know, time for them is not like time for us. They're quite happy to spend 25 years in a practical joke thinking you're communicating with a relative when it wasn't. They don't care about time. You know, for us, it's a whole different ballgame. And the problem is trying to get that information out. But we are, at this time, on the cusp. When I said right at the beginning, we are on the cusp of change because people at the top level now realizing, hang on a second, there's much more going on here. And this is why we have US senators coming out and saying the science program, the military science guys, wouldn't deal too much with the UFO stuff because they thought it was demonic. And they actually have references in official documentation from the government now. It's called demonic technology. what is going on here? How much does this subject have to change for realizing what's going to be actually happening? We are on the cusp, James. This is going to be coming out, you know, that this is much more than just nuts and bolts craft, some creature coming from some distant planet. We've been told this, we've been given the ruse, you know, but we have not got the evidence to support that. The evidence supports something completely different.
Yes, and you pointed out how the ancients throughout the world, at some point, a significant amount of them decided to do away with these temples. And the way the temples were constructed and ancient sites in general, they built there was a substructure, and it was built almost in the layered fashion, organic, some certain degree of orgone, but other things that facilitated a cavitating, resonating effect. So you had a lot of these crypts and what have you. And then you look at a Native American similarity, like a sipapu kind of thing, where a substructure. But this was where a lot of the ceremonies, a lot of the communication, what have you, took place. Then somewhere along the line, not quite a 100 monkey perspective, but like a 70% perspective, all throughout the world simultaneously, they said, no mas. Something is going on here and we want to cut it off. And then you see the tapestry woven throughout time, where you pointed out in World War II, the Germans were getting all this insight and were coming up with rockets and jets and what have you. Look what happened with the paperclip operation, and a direct correlation to that was Jack Parsons with Jet Propulsion Lab. He worked closely with Dr. Theodore von Karman, who was absolutely involved in UFO research. And then Parsons winds up working with, of all people, L. Ron Hubbard in the Babylon Working. The official story is he mysteriously blew himself up, right?
Well, yes, that's what they say.
That's what they say, but it's like, what was really going on there? And again, that whole NASA connection, that whole Apollo connection, it's if I didn't know any better, and this is what I think is going on to some degree, is this intelligence, this thing, has been making inroads into our reality for a long time. And now they've found a way to do it through these hereditary bloodlines. Think of them as the astronomer priest of yore, right? And then just as you talked about how your teams and other teams go out there and investigate this stuff, and pretty soon the phenomenon is investigating them, what if, in our hypothetical, not-so-hypothetical example, there are these hereditary bloodlines conjuring up this stuff all the time?
All the time.
And all these ritualistic bloodlettings and certain calendar high days of the year, certain astronomical alignments, they do this stuff, which almost invariably results in some mass kind of bloodletting.
Exactly. Yeah. In one way or another, be it from small sacrifice to mass war now. I mean, it's as if the deities, no matter what they're represented as, from different cultures, different backgrounds, different religions, they want something in return. You know, there is a price to pay. I mean, even we can even do the same thing with the Christian Bible. You know, if we really go to the source, you know, we'll start to realize how much the modern day Bible has changed. But you know what? You know, even the Christian God was no, you know, he had his moments, you know. He'd smite you down if you had a bad day.
Yeah, the Old Testament God, Yahweh, and what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah, all of that stuff. And then you look at the Vedic text, just replete with wars of gods and men. So that backdrop has always been there.
There's blood worship in the Christian Bible. You know, the originals, you know, you sacrifice to the God. It doesn't seem a godly act to take a life of animal or man, you know, to offer it as a sacrifice. It's as if that's the undertone of this phenomena. You know, you've got to do this, you know, because it's that initiation of conduct. It's that, you know, it's that what you would do for me and I will do for you. But it's the same. And these gods have different names and come from different backgrounds. And yet, when you start to look at the core and you realize blood sacrifice is there, it really makes me think, you know, are these all wanting the same thing? Or are we dealing with one thing which has various names and wants the same thing from everybody? You must be rewarded. So we have to reward the deity or the god, in one way or another. In nowadays, modern day, we can reward these deities by the thousands, because we have mass weapons. So, it's just on a grander scale.
Well, what's interesting was I recently saw the updated Ghostbusters movie, right? I had no idea what I was going to see, but spoiler alert, the super villain deities were once again these ancient Mesopotamian gods, these malevolent gods from the Near East, Babylon, Chaldea, Sumeria. It was them again, right? And, spoiler alert, but the Ghostbusters thwart the plan, but the plan was essentially to take over the whole planet and reduce everyone to mindless demonic slaves. So, well, we've had a very interesting first segment, and we're just getting started, folks. Steve, if anyone wants to contact you with information or for whatever reason, how do they find you?
They can go to my website, stevemera.com. I've got all my details on that, stevemera.com. I've got my own website.
And for our dear listeners out there, if you like what we do, if you believe what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up, become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.